This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, you've made the cut. It's awful, but I'm here, JT, along with my buddy Aaron from the North. Aaron, how are you?
I am amazing, and that wasn't even that bad.
No, not bad. It's not bad at all. So if you've been listening along with us throughout this whole PTBN Greatest WWE Wrestler Ever project, you know that Aaron and myself have done a series of podcasts and a couple of pod blasts looking at our thoughts, how we're going to work our list, breaking down the candidates. We call them Making the Cut. Well, now that the list is complete and the ballots are submitted and all that, we're now going to talk about who made our cut on these podcasts. So as you're listening to this, these are pre-recorded. So just know that the list is either fully out, maybe partially out. I have no idea when we're going to release these. So in some shape, form, or manner, you'll know most of the list probably by the time you hear these. But this is me and Aaron walking through our lists, right?
Yes, and I'm never going to release mine aside from these podcasts, so who knows when. You'll never see it.
Yeah, that'll be it. So this is your only chance to learn about Aaron's list.
And about my life, really,
because
yes. We're going to get into that, too.
True. We're going to get into a lot of things, I'm sure. So why don't we get started?
Yeah. So my 89. What? Who do you have at 89?
So staying with the New Day theme, it is Kofi Kingston. Do you have him ranked?
Yeah, quite a bit higher.
Okay. He's got so much down time, but he's got a lot of memorable moments thanks to his Rumble spots. I was watching that Raw 25 dealio that they're doing, and they had the whole thing with him and Orton, that whole segment from MSG, and he was so over and so hot during that, and then he just got buried shortly after it. I feel like he's a guy that always had some momentum, but he seemed destined to be on that list of like wasted guys from like the late 2000s. You know, just, all right, kind of peaked at US and was around for a while. Almost like, was he trending to be like a Dolph now, just without the world title reigns, you know? Right. New Day clearly saved him. Would you argue he's the lesser of the three, or do you have him above Xavier in your New Day ranking?
I'd have him above Xavier.
Okay. All right. Why do you have him higher?
Because I think he makes it on New Day the same way Big E would. I think he's just as important to New Day because he's, in a lot of ways, the link to the company history with New Day. Like, I don't think New Day works as well if you have just kind of three new guys. I think it's good that they have a guy who's been there a long time as part of it.
Right.
And I thought his heel work was interesting when they first turned too, because it was cool to see him in that vein. But I also think his solo career is actually very strong.
Yeah.
Like, obviously it doesn't hit the heights of guys who've won world titles. I mean, obviously not. But, like, I can't think of too many bad Kofi Kingston matches.
See, I think he's one of those guys, like, who are we talking about? I'm trying to think of, like, in the honorable mention and stuff, like a guy that you just don't think of the bad because you're not thinking of every Raw and every SmackDown that he was on for all those years. So I'm not saying they're bad, but I think he's compiled a lot of meh.
For sure he has middling matches, but that's going to be everyone who's been on the show, right? But, like, when you look at his work, like, he's pretty excellent as soon as he comes in. He's really good in that Money in the Bank at WrestleMania 25.
Yep.
I would say he's the highlight of that. He's got a really good feud with Dolph that I quite like throughout the summer of 2009. I think it's 2009, yeah.
Well, when was he on ECW? Was that 08?
That was 08.
Yeah, because Mike Adamley was there.
Yes. Yes. And so, like, he's got a lot of, like, very good matches. So I would say most of his pay-per-view offerings tend to range from, like, good to very good.
Right.
You know? And, like, he's always a serviceable yet not a spectacular Intercontinental or U.S. champ, but he's good enough to carry the belt, and he's good enough to have good matches with it. He had I liked his team with Evan Bourne.
That was good, too. Yep.
I thought they were really good, like, in terms of, like, his tag work. And he got his Rumble spots, which make him super memorable. He's not a good promo for the era.
No.
I think, like, he gets put in situations, too. Like, I remember DX calling him out for having his fake accent and stuff like that, which, you know, stupid, but... I think he's really good in ring in terms of how he moves. His movement is so fluid and graceful.
Mm-hmm.
The way he does that SOS kick is great. His little moves where he catches the leg and flips him around. Even he's got the memorable spot of, like, the boom drop and all of his flying stuff like kind of set him apart from a lot of other guys.
I do miss his old theme.
SOS. I hear them shouting. That one.
Jamaican me crazy.
I don't know. yeah, I love that song, that thing. I think he's got the catalog of singles matches that kind of puts him above a guy. For instance, a guy like Big E. Like,
right.
I think Big E doesn't have that singles push on top of the New Day stuff. And when I think of New Day in ring, I'm thinking of Kofi and Big E, like in terms of their great matches. So that's kind of why I have him a bit higher. Okay. I've enjoyed his work.
Okay. Very good. Very good. He's clearly a top 100. All right. So have you done your 89 yet? Where are we at? Yeah, you did.
Yeah, he's Big E.
All right. So my 88. This is where I have the gold standard, Shelton Benjamin. Was he on your list?
He did not make my list.
Okay. I was always a pretty considerable Shelton fan. Loved Team Angle. Loved the World's Greatest. I do think he's another guy that has a ton of matches. Like a Kofi, just like littering his resume. He's got some big ones too, the Money in the Banks. Kind of what Kofi was to the Rumble, Shelton is to the Money in the Banks. Like, he had always had that big spot every year. I mean, the first one in 01 was incredible with the Spider-Man and all that. Really great match with the World's Greatest Tag Team, obviously. He's got the one with Kidman and Ray at Vengeance 03, which is a classic. He's got the stuff with Tajiri against the Guerrero. No, was it against Guerrero?
It's against Guerrero and Tajiri.
That's right. Yes, that's right. Okay, World's Greatest against Tajiri and Guerrero, yes. And, of course, good stuff with all that, the three-way and all that stuff, right on the heels of the SmackDown 6. Some good stuff with Kurt as well. And then, you know, as a solo, he's got the big moment with Triple H, right, where he beats him on Raw. Like, that was a really memorable moment there. And pretty much catapulted him into the kind of top end of Raw for a while in 04. Has the fun match with Shawn in the Gold Rush tournament where Shawn has the great super kick as he's coming off the ropes. And then he's got the gold standard stuff. I know you hate the mama stuff, but I thought he was pretty good with that. And then in ECW with the blonde hair, I thought he was solid too. And then they have the reboot with the World's Greatest. They have some good matches with the Hardys in 07, I think, right? 06 or 07 in there somewhere. Which were really good too. And he just, I don't know, he's just always been a solid hand, has enough big matches for me. Again, lacks in the promos a bit. He'd have a good one here or there. And I thought he did have a pretty understated charisma and connection with the crowd in a way where even without the promos and the talking, he still could kind of get it done from that level.
Yeah, I tend to look at Kofi and Shelton in a very similar light. Like, both excellent TV workers, both have a strong catalog of matches, both good in the gimmick matches, but neither one really has that tippy-top singles match that, like, really puts them above. Now, Shelton's got some good ones, like with Triple H. I even really like his match with Jericho at Taboo Tuesday. But, again, it's just there's just something lacking as a single star, and I value the New Day more than the World's Greatest Tag Team, so that's where you get the discrepancy for me.
Right. Okay. No, fair enough. Shelton, probably a bit of a, you know, favoritism for me putting him in there because I was such a big fan of his. I just think he's such a great, pure wrestler. For me, when I think of the top 100, he's easily just in my mind as a guy. Passes my eye test, and then I thought passed a lot of the metrics as well. Especially during a time when there weren't a lot of great tag teams. You could argue they were the world's greatest.
at the time.
The World Wrestling Federation's greatest. No, but he was... he's a guy that they stood out a lot during a time when there weren't a ton of great wrestling tag teams. So,
well, they were fighting a lot of makeshift duos.
Right.
Like, just to get them good matches.
Yeah, correct. They were trying to find whoever they could. And then just to talk about how shitty Chavo is, because some people don't believe it. They had to pull him out of that. Los Guerreros put Jerry in, and the match pops big time. It's way better. But that match with Kidman and Ray is another hidden gem at Vengeance 03. That's such a good match.
Fantastic. Yeah. It doesn't get talked about because it's buried on a really great show.
Right. It's so good. Probably 4.5, I think, right? That's where I went around there.
I got about 4.25. But yeah, really great. Really great. So that was your 88, right?
Yep.
Well, my 88, I think we already talked about, but it's Kenny Shamrock.
Yes.
I love the World's Most Dangerous Man. And I mean, I think he gets on... We didn't talk a lot about this when we were planning out the project, but like, I really think influence matters.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, like we talked about already, his influence is huge.
You want to knuckle up?
Yeah, you knuckle up, right? You knuckle down. You scream, get out of my way. it all works. But I also thought that he doesn't have like a five-star match or probably even a four-star match in terms of like singles work.
Yeah.
But I thought he was really a fun guy to watch on television. Like he's really good in that Intercontinental title tournament.
Mm-hmm.
I really like that whole Intercontinental run.
Yeah.
I love him in the Rock feud. Like, just obliterating The Rock every time, but never able to seal the deal because of his anger issues. But yeah, and the influence of the tap out that we mentioned already is huge. Like, and although he wasn't a great promo, his screaming was.
He was a great promo, just in his own way, right? I mean, he's, you know, he's just like the energy and everything. This was the best thing I could say about his promo skills is everything felt authentic.
Oh, yeah.
Like, everything, like, he wasn't a guy that you could say, oh, Ken's just working. Like, I think Ken thought it was real. You know what I mean? like I feel like he thought everything was like if he looks back, he's like thinking like everything he did was real. Like that's what it feels to me. I think it's a credit just to his whole shoot style and all that stuff. But and he picked it up quick in a lot of ways. He's like the I don't know evolutionary or pre-evolutionary like Angle is like the evolutionary Shamrock. You know what I mean? Like
right
down to the ankle lock. But the guy that kind of came in. Had the legit fighting background, was a bit of a prodigy, picked it up fast, connected with the crowd. His angle took it to the next level because he was that much better of a pure athlete.
Do you think that has anything to do with the fact that Shamrock wrestled for real for longer beforehand?
You mean like as a pro wrestler?
No, I mean as a UFC guy. Like you get so locked into what the techniques are for that,
right?
That it doesn't necessarily translate as well.
So you think it hurt him?
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe. I think he just didn't have the natural physical ability that Angle had. He's more of a fighter. Like, Angle's a great gifted mat wrestler and just, like, a freak athlete. You know what I mean? Like, he had the speed, like, all that. Like, Ken is a great athlete, but more... I don't want to take away from him being an athlete. He's just a bit of a different style, that's all.
Are you saying you're a better athlete than Ken Shamrock?
Yes, I can. If I could beat Ken Shamrock, definitely in a match.
Yeah, probably. I mean, in a glass-knuckled... shoot fight.
Oh, I love Ken.
At the time, there was no one on earth that had a better body to play Superman than Ken Shamrock.
Yeah.
Like that barrel chest, I could see that cape flowing off of him. Superman snapping on Lex Luthor and breaking his ankle.
Get out of my way!
Get out of my city!
I wish I could make more jokes, but my knowledge of comics is quite limited.
How many condoms full of blood did Ken Shamrock swallow?
So many.
So many, right?
Yeah. Although he is crazy enough that it wouldn't shock me if he really made himself bleed internally to get it over.
What did he do? Did he grind glass into his food?
I'm going to chew this glass and spit it up at the exact moment I need to.
I got to sell the ankle.
I'm going to give myself liver cancer just so I can spit up blood.
Ken, you're bleeding black into your body. You might want to get out of my way, doctor.
Kingdom 98 is really good with him. And then a good little story in 99 where he gets her. And yeah, he's got the matches with Blackman in 99 that are fun. The stuff with Owen in 98. Owen. We talked about him a lot. He's great.
Yeah. And even King of the Ring 98, it's against The Rock.
Right.
Like just, he fights The Rock in the first round, right?
No, the finals.
Is it the finals? Yeah. He fights Severin.
No.
No, The Rock fights Severin. I'm just lost.
Yeah.
I don't know.
He fights,
what I'm
fuck.
Jarrett?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yep.
There we go.
Severin fights Rock. And because everyone assumed it was going to be Severin to Shamrock.
Right. And they put Rock instead.
Yeah. Which is probably better long term. At the time, it seems stupid, but long term is much better.
No, The Rock's a much better choice.
I mean, I'm going to go out on a real big limb and say it made a lot more sense to have The Rock in that match than Dan Severin. A real hot take.
Who do you think had a better career, The Rock or Dan Severin?
A real political hit. Yeah. All right. 87 is the guy that started this all, this relationship for you and me in the GWWE. And he's pretty much right where I think I said I'd have him when we first did that very first pod blast back in May. And that was Marty Jannetty. We talked in depth about him on that pod blast. I think he's a great worker. I think he has a lot of... really, really good stuff. A great connection with the crowd. I think for a time he was the better worker than Michaels and the Rockers. I think he has stuff beyond the Rockers too that pops really well. All the tag work with Kid, all the stuff in 93, right down to the match with Johnny Polo, the stuff with the Quebecers. He's got the comeback in 95 and 96, which has some fun stuff in it. The match with Sean on Raw in 96, in addition, of course, to the ones in 93. some of the tag work he did with Razor. And then even the stuff with like Skip in like late 95, he's got some pretty fun stuff with him. And then his comeback in 05 or whatever it was, where he fights Angle in that really, really good, damn good match to tag stuff with La Rez and just that unbelievable out of nowhere comeback. To me, he has enough really good wrestling on his resume to climb this list. I look at him similar to Shelton, just with a little bit better stuff from a tag perspective.
I have him at 116. He's sandwiched between Taka Michinoku and Jacques
Rougeau.
Oh,
okay.
His daughter. Yeah, I mean, look, we talked about him at length. My big thing is he never got past the Rockers. Like, well, we talked about it. You can go back and listen to Making the Cut, the pod blast with him. I don't think he's bad by any stretch, yeah. But to me, he feels unmemorable more than anything else.
I don't know. See, I just feel like he's memorable with all the Rocker stuff. Like, I thought he stood out in a lot of those matches.
I think he's great. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, I think he's a really good worker. Like, I think it's his singles work that hurts him for me.
Yeah.
Like, the lack of the huge moments that did.
He's got nothing. The huge moment, the Raw match where he wins the title.
It's okay. It's okay. It's a good moment, but, like, he doesn't exist in that world without Sean for me. And that speaks volumes to, like, what he was as a character. Like, if Shawn Michaels isn't there, like, let's say that they both leave the company, Shawn Michaels never comes back, Marty Jannetty probably has nothing going on ever again.
I don't know. You think so?
Yeah, because everything is related to that. Like, I mean, with the possible exception.
No, see, I think if anything, it hurt him in a way because everything's related to that. Like, they never really let him get past it. Like, he's always just the Rocker, you know?
But that's just it. That's just it. Like, but, like, the thing is that, like, let's say, like you could make even his tag work with, say, Kid, it's based on him coming back to fight Shawn, right? And then it evolves into that. Like, if you don't have Shawn Michaels around, like, as he just doesn't exist as a solo character without him. Everything is forever linked there. Whereas other guys, he's like Jim Neidhart. Jim Neidhart will always be, mind you, he's a better worker than Jim Neidhart. I'm not claiming that. But Jim Neidhart will always be Bret Hart's partner. Or maybe fighting Bret Hart on the side of Owen Hart. He never evolved past that, and I feel the same way about Jannetty.
But I don't think he was a Shawn Michaels partner until Shawn Michaels got great, and that's not until a little bit later. Like, Shawn is really good in, like, 93 when Marty comes back, but they don't seem like – Shawn doesn't seem levels above him in 93. You know what I mean? Like,
I'm not saying he is, but I'm saying that, like
– But I don't think he was a Shawn Michaels partner when he was actually wrestling. You're using hindsight to say, looking back at him now, he was Shawn Michaels' partner, but – through the majority of his solo run, he wasn't, because Shawn didn't really get huge until, you can maybe say when he comes back in like late 95 for that 1 year from 95 to 96. But I think like his best solo run is more the, you know, 93,
I'd say his best solo run is 93.
Right. And that 93. He was not just Shawn Michaels' partner at that point. He was Shawn Michaels' equal back as a face.
Yeah. I'm not, when I say partner, I'm not putting Shawn Michaels on a pedestal above him. What I'm saying is that like Shawn Michaels was able to evolve as a character past the Rockers. Whereas Marty Jannetty wasn't. And that's
I think it's more because he was kept as a face.
It's possible. It's possible.
Shawn had to. Shawn could not stay as the Rocker to go heel.
But Rick, well, he could have changed from he could have made adjustments.
No,
he could have done,
I think were you about to say something about Rick Martel?
No.
Oh. I'm hearing things.
We'll talk about Rick Martel, but yeah.
Much later. No, but if you look at face heel breakups, generally that's how it goes. The strike force breaks up and, you know, Martel radically alters his character and Tito stays Tito, right? So, I mean, like, right. I feel like that's kind of a thing, right? Where the guy, one turns radically different heel and one stays pretty
but
much
even
as
when,
they were.
But even when Jannetty went heel, he is still a Rocker.
Yeah, but I'm talking when they split.
Sure, but it's like a pattern.
Yeah.
Like, it's a pattern of him just always being a Rocker.
Sure, but
forever
as a heel, and it's just got it. By that point, he wasn't getting. If he was getting like a solo push as a heel, I think they would have changed his gimmick.
I would hope so, but they would never stuck him in a solo push because he sucks.
You suck. All right, who's your?
I know, I suck. I'm sorry. I don't hate Marty Jannetty. I like him a lot. He just didn't fit on my list.
He fits in Rikishi's ass.
Oh, you're bringing it back. Speaking of asses, my 87.
Ooh, who could it be?
Is King Kong Bundy?
Oh.
What did you think it was going to be?
Someone with a great ass. Not just a big one.
Well, it's great. It's great in terms of size. Yeah. King Kong Bundy for me was
Alexa's
one of the first wrestlers I was scared of.
By the way, Alexa. Great squatter.
Yeah.
Does a lot of squats.
Yeah.
Give me that. How's, ass.
Is that voice creepy? Yeah.
Yeah, it's very creepy. It's actually making me incredibly uncomfortable.
Give me that ass.
Okay.
God, I love
that. All right, let's talk about King Kong Bundy and not in that voice.
King Kong Bundy is a massive ass. And a shiny head that I could put it in. All right. King Kong Bundy, main event WrestleMania 2. Huge part of the I love his role as a Hogan antagonist during that entire stretch from, say, I would guess the storyline before WrestleMania 2, but all the way almost up until WrestleMania 3. I find he's a pretty solid antagonist for Hogan during that period. I really dig his I really dig the series of matches they do on Saturday Night's Main Event in the late 87, where Bundy beats him by DQ, and then Hogan comes back and beats him the next one, but then it leads into Andre killing him. So I think he's actually quite an important guy for that era. Like, you needed someone like that to carry Hogan over in those periods. And he didn't just have a one-off with him. Like, he had a one-off with a lot of guys. Like,
right.
He had kind of a one-off with Killer Khan, you know? Like, whereas, like, Bundy, I mean, he fought him in a main event in a cage match, and then it carried and carried and carried. He's a really interesting part of that Survivor Series 87 match with Hogan. I also like a lot of his stuff with the Machines early on when he's fighting, like, when he's partnered with Stud. They're not the best team by any stretch, but I think they're an imposing team and an interesting one to watch. His cons are he doesn't have a huge any really tip-top matches, like, in terms of quality. He's got tip-top matches in terms of importance. Mm-hmm. His body work isn't exactly huge. His character's fun, though, with the 10 count and stuff like that. It's a bit different.
Five count,
excuse me.
Idiot.
I know.
Rank this guy. I don't even know his biggest gimmick.
God, imagine his balls. I thought he moved well for a big guy. He was believable in the ring.
Defend 94 and 95 to me.
My next thing was the less said about his return, the better, which is why I can't possibly have him higher.
He has one great moment in that run to me. He looks really cool on that heel team as far as Series 94. Like him and Bigelow and all that stuff. Like, that's a cool look.
That's the one that Lex Luger wins, right?
Nope, definitely not.
I know. But yeah, no. I mean, look, he sucked against the Undertaker. Yeah, you know, but it didn't make any. He looks so out of place in that match.
He does.
I don't think you could have had anyone more. I think Bruno Sammartino would have looked more place fighting the Undertaker.
Ivan Koloff in 1995.
Yeah. So, but for his 80s run and
Trish would have been great.
Yeah, but the match would have sucked because she's a chick. But him squashing those midgets is also an all-time moment.
Oh, for sure.
In greatness. So I wanted to show him some love, and he's kind of in this little fat guy segment I have.
The Stephen Graham Memorial fat guy stretch. he is not on my list. But I have gained more appreciation for him, Scott and I, working through 85, 86, into 87. He had a really good series of fun matches with the Colossal Jostles. I don't know if you've seen those.
No.
In late 85 MSG, he has a run of, like, him and Andre fight, and then they do a tag with Andre, and then it's, like, it's Andre and Hillbilly against, like, him and Stud. And, like he's kind of got all these, like, big matches, like, with Andre that are pretty fun. He's got the singles match with Andre is a lot of fun. And they call it Colossal Jostle 2. And then that leads into him going into Mania. One other moment you didn't mention is special delivery WrestleMania 1. Like, that's a pretty memorable moment as well. So, no, he's got a lot of good stuff. Just post 2, from 2 to 3, he doesn't really do a ton at all. Honestly, at least MSG-wise or Saturday Night's Main Event-wise, he's kind of there. Fun match with Jake on an early 87 Saturday Night's Main Event was quite fun as well. It was a surprisingly fun match between the two of them. And then, of course, the midget stuff. And then after that, he's got that Hogan match on the main event, like you mentioned. That's pretty much it. And then the 94-95 is, like, I like that era, but I have no way to defend his work.
No.
Just watched all the Raws, and there's nothing about him that stands out any of that stuff. Besides when the NFL guys are all calling out the corporation members, and one of them, I forget who it is, was paired up with Bundy, was pretty funny. So, yeah, not on my list, but I could see him being in the conversation.
Yeah, like, look, like, he's not in the top 50, right? Like, to me, that WrestleMania main event gets him something, because he wasn't main eventing a dead period.
Right. Like, no, definitely not.
So, yeah.
All right, so what do we got? My 86? All right. Is a guy that I had... One of the guys that actually moved around my list the most, up and down, and that's Dean Ambrose. I wasn't sure where to put him. Like, I had him a little bit higher, and then I had him a little bit lower, and then he just kind of fell in here. He's got so much great stuff with the Shield, a couple of great moments as a solo, but just all that Bray stuff, and just he's spinning his wheel so badly. His character... I thought he was really good as a face at first. Like, I liked that they went against the Green because everyone thought he'd be the heel, and they made him face, and I thought he was actually a really good face for a bit. And then that changed. It just got really fucking boring. I hate the goddamn rebound off the middle rope every match. I hate that. And anyone that knows me, I've talked about it a lot. I hate spots that are not believable that happen in every match. I hate Farouk standing over the guy's head and getting picked up in every match.
Oh, please. Please, no.
Like, I hate that stuff. Like, Razor Ramon getting backdropped over the ropes during the race. Like, shit that can be avoided that gets done every match, I hate. Like, why is he the only one that somehow happens to fall into the second rope in every match? You know?
And no one's ever fallen like that, ever.
And I hate it with the 619, too. Like, the guy always happened to fall into the ropes at a Ray match only. Like, when it only happens against one guy, like, that shit drives me nuts. So, I actually think his injury will benefit him. I think he'll come back refreshed, and I think he needed the break badly, and I think they should make him... I know they just reformed the Shield, but if anyone's going to go heel soon, I think him and Reigns should turn on Rollins and both go heel. But anyway, he's got a lot of good stuff. He's clearly one of the best 100 they've ever had. He's a really great promo, but just enough bad stuff to drag him down this list a little bit. And I don't know yet if he can work as a solo heel. Like, whenever he had solo heel matches during the Shield run, like, none of them were really that great.
No. I have him a bit higher on the list, not much. This is what I have under his cons. Like, I have a list of pros and cons. My cons list is Wyatt feud, Rollins feud, Miz feud, any feud. Because his feuds are fucking terrible. I think that he's a guy that they've just cast in a horrible role. Like, he doesn't need to be the goofy, funny guy doing lame comedy.
Right.
Drives me crazy because he actually does have really good delivery in his promos. Mm-hmm. But I hate his promos because of what they have him do. And I actually have Lariat contrived as well. My notes. You're right. Like, he's the lowest guy on the Shield. You have all the Shield guys on, yeah?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Yeah. So me too. And he's by far the bottom one. And I would have never imagined that, when the Shield was first formed.
No, and great facial expressions, great. Like, it can be a little over-exaggerated sometimes, but I agree with you. Like, the comedy's not needed to the level that they have him do it. And I think that's why he's desperately in need of a heel turn, where he could be a little bit more sadistic versus having to be using that sadism is in a goofy way, you know what I mean, like as they do with faces. I mean, the big problem, too, is they don't know how to book faces. Obviously, that's a big issue. Also, I know it wasn't really his fault, but WrestleMania 32 as a mark against him. I mean, that was like his first big shot at a solo Mania match, and it's pretty shitty. So I do think that that's, you know, that is a check mark against him, that he has that on his resume. And
very much booked into a corner, though, in that match.
Oh, for sure. For sure. But still, I mean, he couldn't work his way through it. And then this year he was on the pre-show, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Telling.
Yeah. I mean, he's got the good stuff with Seth, too, like the ladder match and all that stuff. Like, he's got some good stuff, the Battleground match and all that shit.
The Lumberjack match at SummerSlam is good as well.
Yeah.
I hate how he dresses. Like, I never liked wrestlers in jeans.
I mean, you go back to Kevin Kelly. I mean, this is one of the big things he talked about with Ambrose. Remember on the Kevin Kelly show where he had shit on him because he looked like a slob? You know, like, all that stuff about him that he kept burying him in. You know, a lot of it was true. Like, he just said he'll never be a star and never see him as a main event guy. And I remember he was one of the guys that when I started showing Jeff of Jeff Learns Wrestling some stuff, and he saw like a minute of Raw, and he's kind of like, who the fuck is this guy? Like, I don't ever see him being he didn't believe in him at first glance either. So, but I do, one last thing aside, and I'll let you talk a little bit more. I do think they missed the boat on him a couple times and didn't help him. Like, there was a big groundswell before WrestleMania 32 to get him involved in that main event. He had the big match at Roadblock against Triple H. And, like, I definitely think it was a big whiff not to combine those matches at WrestleMania 32 and make it a four-way. They should have just had the four of those guys in there. I think it would have helped a ton with both matches if they did that.
Yep, I would agree with that. I also think he was the one they should have gone as the face out of the Shield breakup. Like, I think he was more ready to be higher up on the card than Roman Reigns was at the time.
For sure.
They broke up.
Yeah.
Like,
a couple of times.
Was, And just from the perspective of, like, he's the one who really got into the blood feud with the other guy.
Right.
That I'm sure helped him. You can't deny that, like, as part of the Shield, though, he was a huge part of those matches. And those matches do really stand the test of time well. And I also really dug the Owens match at Rumble 16, right?
Yeah, because they feuded at the end of 15 to 16.
Yeah, like, I would say of all his feuds, that's probably the one that was the strongest for me.
Yeah, but, no, I mean, what do you think of the Dolph matches from last year?
They're okay.
Yeah.
But Dolph was kind of put as a challenger out of nowhere.
Right.
Right, and then the match is fine, but...
How much does the Bray stuff drag it down for you?
How much does the...
The Bray stuff drag it down for you?
Oh, horrible, horrible. Yeah. But that's anybody who runs... How high is Bray in your list? He's top 20, right?
He's actually beyond one.
Transcends the list. He's a hologram living within the list. His stuff with Bray is terrible. And it's weird because it was cool they gave Ambrose the belt when they did, but it felt like totally the wrong time to give it to him. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I would agree with that. There were other times where I think they probably could have pulled the trigger with him and gone a different direction. He's definitely a classic they waited too long guy. And then they finally give him the belt and they let him run with it on SmackDown and make it his show. And even then, it's pretty short-lived, right? How long did he hold it for?
I believe he held it till September. So like June to September, right?
Yeah.
So that's not even long. Like it feels like a waste. And it's a shame to give it to him not when he's at his most over. But that's the story of the WWE.
Right. I always wait a day too late. I think we exhausted Dean. You had him a little bit higher, you said?
Yeah, I got him about 10 spaces higher than you.
Okay, all right.
But again, that's on the strength of the Shield stuff.
Right. Oh, yeah. The Steel stuff's great. Shield stuff is great. So, yeah, we'll be curious. Number two is not too much further ahead of number one here for me as far as Ambrose or the next guy. I'm sure you can guess which one it is. all right. Who's your 86?
86 is Rikishi.
Oh, okay. Beautiful. I think we talked exhaustively about him. Do you want to do your 85 then?
Yeah, sure. My 85 is a man. Okay. Surprise.
Yeah.
He has long sideburns.
And his hair is
slicked back.
Yes.
You know how he's coming to your town?
In a Chevy Colorado.
Yes, exactly, because the Cadillac is destroyed. It's a honky-tonk man. To me, this is a guy who needed to be on my list.
Oh, yeah. So hang on. Let me just announce. He's my 84.
Oh, perfect. We're right in the same mindset. Yeah. Okay, no good in the ring. Hang on,
because I've pretty much been watching his evolution now, because we are in the summer of 87 on the Place to Be podcast, and he is actually solid in the ring right now. Like, the matches with Jake, not too bad. He has two great matches with Ricky Steamboat on a back-to-back MSG shows. One's a straight match, one's a lumberjack match, where he is not being carried. He is working his ass off in those matches. I went three, but I think Pete or Scott, one of them went four on the straight up match, and then the lumberjack match is really good too. So anyone who's always is questioning Honky's in ring, like, those are two matches I'll point to as, like, he could actually work when he wanted to.
I'll check those out. Terrible as a face.
Mm,
one of the most ill-conceived face characters of all time, but molten as a heel. Heels today, like Roman Reigns level of heel.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
For 1997. So memorable. Elevated the IC title to it, despite him not necessarily being the greatest in-ring worker, those matches aside, elevated that title to almost a main event level title because of his heat. It wasn't around that long, but his Savage feud is great. The stuff on Saturday Night's Main Event with Liz and shoving her down and all that's wonderful. And that whole year, that culmination of him cheating and never winning a match, for it to culminate with the Warrior destroying him, is absolutely perfect.
And I'm actually curious to see when that starts. I mentioned that on the last podcast, is because I was like, he hasn't done it too much yet. Like, he hasn't done the sneaky escaping with his belt. I'm waiting to see when that actually kicks in. Is it when Savage starts or what?
Well, when I started watching wrestling, it was around October 87. So all I knew of him was this guy who never won a match. He'd walk out every time. He'd get disqualified. And that's the only thing I knew about him. And that was the – and he was an important champion in the company.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
And, I mean, his character's great. He made it work. I mean, it's such a stupid idea on paper, like an Elvis impersonator. But, like, it's a great, great, great character. Like, there's some matches where he's singing for 10 minutes before the match and the crowd is screaming at him the whole time. A decent promo in general. I would say, like, even if he has those matches, which I'll check out, like, a very soft worker.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like, punches a dog, like, shit.
Yeah, like, I remember Daniel Bryan calling The Miz soft, but The Miz had nothing on Honky Tonk Man for soft. Just a memorable guy and, like, fun as a tag team wrestler later on. Like, never as important as that Intercontinental run, but the greatest Intercontinental run of all time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. Well, maybe. Storyline perspective, yes.
Right. I mean, you could probably argue Savage's was better in terms of, like, match quality, and it's Randy Savage, right?
Right, but, and maybe, like, one of the Michaels ones or something, or Brett.
I see. I don't even know. The Intercontinental was nowhere near as hot with Perfect as it was with Honky Tonk.
Okay.
But that also might have to do with his challengers. Like, Perfect wasn't fighting the top guys in the company, kind of like Honky Tonk Man was.
I'll give you that.
Definitely. Yeah.
Okay. But no, Honky, yeah, I mean, he's going to be on the list. I mean, just for his success and as a draw, as a heel. Do you think it went on a little too long? I mean, I wasn't watching at the time in real time, so it's hard for me to state. But did you feel like it was out of gas before SummerSlam?
I would say no, but it's probably because of the pay-per-view schedule.
Okay, yeah.
Because they only had to bring him out and defend every 4 months, like, really. It was okay. For me, it was okay. And because it ended so perfectly.
Right.
Like, if Beefcake had just passed him out at WrestleMania 4, it wouldn't have been as impressive as him being like, just get me someone out here to wrestle.
Right.
Yeah. And superstar Billy Graham, like, tearing into him on commentary.
You don't do that, brother.
There are men that there are guys in that locker room that'll tear this man apart.
But yeah, no, I mean, that's a huge jump up moment, of course. And yeah, I mean, a little, you know, he's got some decent stuff after that. But again, his peak is pretty much done. But no, I do enjoy him as a character. I've come to appreciate him more. And his shtick still works. Watching this stuff with Jeff, he hates him. It still holds up. It still holds up pretty well.
Even his returns are fun.
Yeah.
Like, he never overstays it. Like, he'll come in the Royal Rumble, he'll get killed. Like, he's usually a welcome addition to most of what he does. With the possible exception of Rockabilly.
Yeah, even that. I mean, he's memorable because he gets the shit kicked out of him at the end.
Yeah.
With the, when they formed the Outlaws. Like, so, whatever.
That's right.
You got that. No, I mean, yeah, I think Honky's a solid choice. To make the list. I think this is about where he is just because he lacks, like, the big matches and the in-ring ability. So I think it's fair to have him here and not a little bit higher. I think he's here on the strength of his character and the storyline.
Yeah. And easily one of the most memorable characters of that era in an era full of memorable characters.
Right. Oh, for sure. I mean, yes. And big part of that is he's completely aping Elvis, but, he's, you know, it works. One of my favorite tropes of Gorilla, what is the line he keeps rattling off every time, is Elvis was a great human being, and he's like, you know, mimic him. Like, no, he was a good, like, entertainer. Was he really a great human being? Like, Gorilla must have been a huge Elvis mark, because he talks about him with such reverence. It's like Scott talking about, like, championship belts, you know, like the reverence he places on them.
Or Billy Joel.
Yes.
Yeah, right. I don't know. Easy pick.
All right, my 80, so that was your 80, what now?
Five.
Okay, and 85. I did my 84, but I did not do my 85, so we'll do that. And that is Dolph Ziggler. Yeah, you have him?
I have him, about 10 spots higher.
Okay, tell me why you have him higher.
To me, he's Kofi, but better.
Okay.
Like, he's Kofi, but he has a bit... his matches are a bit higher end. And I think he's more important to the company than Kofi was as a singles wrestler.
Right.
So, for instance, like, I think he's one of the greater television workers of a certain era. I think he's lost a step in terms of how he is now, but also in terms of just his overall motivation. I'd say the last 2-3 years, he's not now, that he's coasting, but.
And now it's kind of his character. So it's weird. It's like you don't know where to draw the line between, like, is he in character? Or is he really, like, not caring? You know, like, it's kind of become his thing now, so it's kind of odd. You know,
it's like a poor man's Naito. Do you watch New Japan at all?
No.
Like, Naito is the great. He's a great character in New Japan. Right. He's just disinterested in everything.
Right.
And it works there because he's all in. Dolph Ziggler doesn't feel all in here.
And it's like they gave him kind of one last shot last year with the Ambrose stuff like we talked about, but didn't really connect or get over. He's got the awful fucking Rusev shit with Summer and all that. That was just brutal with Lana. Yeah, I mean, he is like Kofi. He's just a guy that we're going to see this a lot with that 07 to, you know, now range where guys that just hung around and just compiled all these moments and matches and everything else. All this stuff going on. And it's like, all right, at some point, is it just they've been around this much time, like a Jeff Bagwell or whoever, Craig Biggio, I should say, that has just compiled thousands of hits by being around for 22 years. You know, like, this has been around so long, he's bound to have a bunch of great matches. He's a bunch of great workers on the card, you know, when, in fact, his actual percentage is, you know, of hits is much lower because he's had a ton of at-bats. So his average on a whole is lower, which is what I think is the deal with him. I don't know. What do you think of him as a promo?
I think he probably suffers from being too much of a company guy. Because I don't know if you ever watched remember they had the NXT Redemption or whatever that was?
Yeah.
Like, where they had the pros. I always thought he was legitimately funny on those things.
Yeah.
Like, there was something legitimately, and I mean, he does stand-up comedy, and, like, so I think there's something there, but they just don't tap into it at all as part of his character.
What do you think if he had a different name?
Oh, it'd probably help. If it was just Nick Nemeth?
Anything.
Oh, yeah,
I was anything other than. On that Raw special, they had a thing with him when he had the short blonde hair, and it was so awful, like the real short curly blonde hair. Oh, God, like the perm. It was brutal. I mean, him and Vicky was good. Like, that was pretty fun. It felt like a poor man's Edge and Vicky.
Yeah, but it was different. Like, it was a mid-card act as opposed to a main event act. Right. Like, I could buy that.
And Edge felt more like the daddy, whereas, like, Dolph felt like more like the guy getting used by the MILF.
Yeah, exactly. I find his strongest era is probably, like, 2009 to 2012.
Right.
I think he's actually quite strong in there because you get a great series with Rey Mysterio
in there. Really good. Yeah,
you get his U.S. title run, which is a lot of fun. Like his the one that ends up with Zack Ryder beating him. I think that actually brought some legitimacy to that U.S. title because he was going out and busting his ass every pay per view,
right?
And having good matches, and that was along the time too where they were doubling him up. Like they'd have him in a U.S. title match and then he'd be back later in a Survivor Series match. So they clearly saw something there. He's good in that Money in the Bank he wins. His Money in the Bank cash in is an all-time moment
based on
how over he was. So he's a guy – I mean, we'll get into more moments. But he's a guy who they just totally – we'd be having a totally different conversation if they just pushed him when he was hot.
Right.
Because there was a time where he was legitimately one of the two or three top over guys in the company.
Well, I mean, but then like a Daniel Bryan, the injuries plagued him. Like right when they finally gave him the ball, he broke down with the, you know, got the concussion and then couldn't get it together in time to make a count. So all the heat he had coming off that Money in the Bank faded fast because
of that.
Right,
but that was also like – but that's also based on like a year of consistently being over with the crowd. It's not – he wasn't just over then.
Oh, no, I know. So I'm just saying like – like Brian, right? He was over forever, and then they finally did it, and then he broke down from overuse.
Yeah, I think his match with Del Rio at Payback, where he gets kicked in the head all those times,
right?
I think that match is excellent.
Yeah,
like, just excellent. It's a perfectly clean double turn, and it's done all within the context of the match. Whereas like Bret Hart, Steve Austin, not that it wasn't done in the match, but you needed that little extra at the end from Bret,
right?
where he beats him up after the match. He walks away from the fight with Shamrock. Whereas this, like, they just built the sympathy so well in the match. And Dolph's overselling actually worked in that context, which was nice. I think he has a good series with Jericho the next year too.
Mm-hmm.
And as much as we talked about, I didn't really like his stuff with Ambrose. I thought his stuff with Miz that last year was good.
Yeah. He's definitely got a lot of good stuff. I mean, he's a great wrestler. There's no doubt about it. He's got enough there. I mean, the Spirit Squad stuff, I think, adds to it a little bit too. Like some memorable moments. And I love that gimmick. I mean, it was overused from a main event perspective, and then they were used just to stroke DX. But I mean, for a while, I thought they were legit really, really good in that gimmick. And he was a big part of that. I do think a different name and maybe a slightly different look probably helps him. A bit. And again, a guy that just was around for so long, like you talked about Cody before and others, that you almost lose track of some of the really good stuff because this is so much crammed into these, you know, 7 or 8 years.
Yeah.
It's like, it's hard to just keep everything straight, you know, and clear, like what everything was. So that's all part of it. But no, I think he clearly belongs on the list just because he is so good in the ring.
Yeah, and just like two things about that. Like to me, there's a difference between having middling matches and having a pile of great matches.
Right.
Or having like great matches and then terrible matches.
Yeah.
Like a guy like Kane has great matches and terrible matches. Dolph Ziggler doesn't have a lot of terrible matches.
No.
Like they're usually at least competent. And for me too, he was the first guy that I really started to notice that like their nicknaming and branding didn't make sense anymore. Like when he started really selling himself as the show off.
Right.
Like I think it's something small, but I think something like that is so detrimental to a character. Mm-hmm. Because you're never gonna call yourself that. Like you wouldn't be like, I'm the show off.
Right. Hello. I like to show off.
Yeah. Like and it's just like, or when his whole thing was like, I'm here to only steal the show. Like I don't know how much of that was him, how much of that was the writing, but I think it's those little things that slowly chipped away at his legitimacy. Legitimacy he did build during that U.S. title run, where actually I thought his look was interesting and different.
Mm-hmm.
Like, whereas now it's outdated.
Right.
So, like, I guess the low point is the Rusev stuff.
Yeah, very low.
Yeah.
The Survivor Series match is fun, too. The Sting one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But then again, another instance where they probably could have pushed him.
Right. And they didn't.
They could have. And they just decided not to. And he's also really good in that the ladder match with Daniel Bryan at mm-hmm. 31.
Yeah,
it's a really big part of that. Yeah, those headbutts at the end.
Idiots.
I mean, that's always been my argument, and I think we've talked about this, of like, oh, you can't put Daniel Bryan in with Brock Lesnar. Well, he's in a ladder match getting headbutted. Like, I don't think they really care about his concussions if they're letting him do that. Like,
right, right. So, all right, yeah. So there you go. You pretty much exhausted Dolph.
Yeah. Hopefully I exhausted the audience, too.
You exhausted me.
Good. I'm glad. So my 84 is Yokozuna,
or
Yakazuma, as the great Virgil would say.
Yes.
We already talked about his fat ass, so.
Yes. You did have him significantly higher, but we did. I think we dove into him well enough, so.
Yeah, I don't know. For me, it just seemed like he had enough solid stuff to go up a bit.
Yeah. No, I mean, your argument maybe I'd reconsider, so good on you.
Right.
Okay. So why don't we do my 83 then? How about that?
Sure. And we'll talk about how poor that decision is.
So my 83 is the magnificent one, The Rock, Don Morocco, who you do not have ranked, right? So we're going to – by the way, going forward, Aaron, why don't we just do this? If I have a guy or you have a guy that the other person doesn't have, we'll talk about him. Otherwise, we'll just do when they pop up higher. You always want to do that?
I guess.
Okay.
I mean, if you want to get organized.
Yeah, let's organize, because I feel like right now we're very disorganized. So
we're not good at this at all.
No, we're not. We're awful. Like I listened to like Chad and Andy, and it's like a machine. And you know, here we are at 85, like 7 hours in. But it's cool. We like to talk to each other, so it's okay.
Yes.
All right. So Don Morocco, you did not rank him. Do you want me to talk about him first, or do you want to tell me why you did not put him on your list?
Well, I kind of talked – we talked briefly about him in our honorable mentions episode.
Right.
So you go ahead first, and I'll just – I'll go with the counterpoint.
I think from a character standpoint, he had a lot working for him, right? I mean, the beach bum seems like it's maybe lame at times, but just anyone who eats a fucking sandwich while wrestling a squash match like deserves some kind of recognition. And him and Fuji were legit funny together in a very just stoogy, like the TNT stuff is great, right? I mean, but it's like it's so campy bad and they know it. So, like, I like him for that. I like the Steamboat feud. The matches were hit or miss, but I like the feud, like the attack where they hang him with the belt, like is a really good jump up moment. His matches with Hogan in MSG, I think is the summer of 85, were like really good sprints. Like that's a cool thing about Hogan matches too during that stretch. Like there's a lot of sprints and Morocco kept up with him. And honestly, I've actually liked his early face work more than I would have expected. Scott and I are watching, you know, late 87 right now, and he is really active in the ring. And I think the face role actually suited him almost a little bit better. Because his selling is pretty good. And the problem as a heel is he just has kind of meandering offense. But as like a guy who gets beat down, he builds some nice sympathy and has good quick hitting like power offense. And I watched a match recently where his finisher was he stood behind the guy on the – I think it was either the middle – I think it was a top rope. And he drove him to the mat with his knee in the back of his neck, which was like a really cool move.
There's no way that's safe.
No, but it looked awesome. I know he gets even more bloated and out of control roided as 88 goes on and his you know work rate becomes very limited. But I don't know. I just, you know, you factor that in. I didn't even talk about his earlier run as Intercontinental Champion, obviously. He's got the feud with Snuka, which is big. You know, the cage match is a big jump-up moment. So I think he's got enough, and he's a memorable enough character, both as a face and a heel. You get the Fuji stuff. So I think all that earns him at least a slot on the list. You know, looking at it, would I maybe have dipped him down a little bit lower? Maybe, but I think others had him higher, so I felt okay with where I had him.
Yeah, the problem I have with him is just like you get into his Intercontinental run, and some of the matches are just such a drudge to get through.
Yeah, but that's the era. But
there are guys in the era who are way more interesting in the ring than he is.
Okay,
and even that that Snuka match in the cage, like. We remember the jump, but that match is like a minute and a half long.
Yeah,
whatever
it
is.
It's not that great of a match, but
But I do really like the Beach Bum character. Like I just think he played it too well. he became too lazy. Yeah,
I can see that. He bought into the hype a little too much, but you know, I'm not going to punish guys for doing their job too well. I think that was Andy's argument. Was it Vince? I think that was his Vince argument that he was too good of a heel or something like that. I'm not gonna ding him for being too into the character. But get it. I get the diminishing returns on him, or you know, I get why some people may not like him. I think it's an acquired taste. I mean, he also always usually rocked that pile driver pretty well too as a finisher, which was cool.
Yeah, and what I did like about him too is that his promos were he could have the kind of laid back promo, but when he needed to turn it on and make it serious, he does it quite well.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah,
I mean, he was my 101 or 102.
Right, like, fringe.
Yeah, he just got bumped off by someone I probably liked more.
So like him and a Yoko, we probably have flipped. You're right. I mean, Yoko was like he made my 100, but he's right on the edge, the cusp. If you will, and Morocco's right outside, and then here we have them right around the same spot. So,
I never would have guessed that I would have Yoko higher than you.
I mean, looking at it, maybe I would flip him Morocco. I don't know. Looking at it again, Yoko, we've talked about him. I don't know. I feel like the lack of matches hurts Yoko. Like he's got a few with Brett, and like not much else. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but he was just such a dominant champion for that year.
He was, and that gets him in the 100.
Yep, at 84 instead of 98 or whatever.
All right, well, how about 83? Who's your 83?
You didn't know who it was?
I don't know.
Well, guess what?
What?
Your butt better call somebody.
My butt? Oh, no. That doesn't sound very attitude-friendly.
Yeah. No, it's not, and I'm aiming the rest of this podcast at children, so...
Oh, that's a weird decision.
Yeah. No, I know. It's probably very misguided.
Yes.
It's the Road Dog, Jesse James.
It is.
And you didn't have him, eh?
No, I didn't.
You have a problem with dogs?
No, I like some dogs.
Just is the Big Boss Man on your list
just
later?
Just not Road Dogs. Yes, Big Boss Man is definitely on my list.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, maybe I don't like dogs.
It's all coming together.
Yeah, I don't know. All right, well, sell me why I should have them at 83.
Well, yeah, at 83. Because during the Attitude Era, he was as over as anyone. Like, maybe, sorry, that's probably crazy, but as over as anyone not named Stone Cold Steve Austin or The Rock. He was, as a tag team wrestler, he was very good in both the heel and face positions. I mean, to this day, if he comes out, people will chant his pre-match spiel verbatim. And it's still going on. And he was quite good as the sympathetic face in that tag team with Billy Gunn. And I also love the way they were a complete breath of fresh air to the tag division at the time as well. Because you're coming out of Godwins and LOD and all that. And then you get these two losers that they just threw together.
They really were losers.
Yeah. And you would never imagine it worked, but it worked almost entirely based on his shtick. Like, I mean, Billy Gunn was fine, and we talked about Billy Gunn in the honorable mentions, but it was Road Dogg's dialogue at the start that I thought hooked them in. He also had all the fun spots in the match. And not only – he kind of had a second career too as the hardcore champion, which, again, you wouldn't imagine him as a singles guy, but he fit really well in that division. Like,
they didn't let him stay there long enough, though.
No. They moved him right back to the division. As a heel too, it was great. As he looked weak, like he looked like a guy that like you or I could fight.
He does look like a weak man, and his offense is weak. Everything about him is weak.
Well, his offense is weak, but his offense was fun. Like, yeah. I mean, I mean the pump handle slam where he sodomizes someone hasn't aged very well. And it just looks weird in retrospect. Like,
yeah, it does.
Is he disrespecting him? Is he enjoying the sodomy? Like, I have a lot of questions.
Yeah, I guess it's kind of a disrespect, like, I'm going to put my balls in your mouth kind of thing, right?
Yeah, or my penis in your ass. I don't know. I've never really disrespected anyone in that fashion.
Well, maybe time to start. It's a new year.
Hey, I'm up for it, okay? It's 2018. As Jump Up, I think you have a ton of the New Age Outlaw stuff. Not a ton of matches, but they're in so many moments. Like, you got the smashing the headbangers with the radio. You got them beating up LOD and shaving Hawk's head. You have in 98, you have the dumpster match and the preamble for that. You have what I thought was a really fun beating of Mankind at SummerSlam 98, mm-hmm. where they just continually smash his head in the dumpster until he's dead. Their breakup didn't go well, but he had the hardcore stuff. He had an intercontinental title run, a very nonsensical intercontinental title run. And I think even if you go before that, his match with Bob Holly at King of the Ring 95 is actually quite good.
On a sliding King of the Ring 95 scale, I think I probably had around like 2.5-ish maybe, so whatever.
A match on that card, right?
Yeah, well, me and you could probably roll out there right now and have a match better than what was on that card.
And we could definitely beat his ass.
It's fine. His roadie run is not bad. I actually like his 1-2-3 kid match better. In your house, too. I think that's better.
Yeah, very good as well.
Yeah.
I mean, look, he has his cons. Like, the Jesse James run is terrible. Like, as the real Double J.
Yes. With the sweatpants.
Yeah.
The tracksuit.
And the scene. Like, when Steve Austin beats him up at Royal Rumble 97, it just feels good. Like we're all better for it. I thought his match quality with the Outlaws wasn't always great. And I think that, like, it's funny, you said we moved him out of the hardcore division for too long, but I thought that once he was out of the hardcore division, I found they spent too much time with him as a singles guy.
Right. He should have stayed in the hardcore division. Like, I think they didn't leave him in there long enough.
Yeah. Looking back too, I don't love the tag team with X-Pac, but it's not nearly as bad as I remember. Like, they're just kind of a solid team in that era. But they're being overshadowed at that point by the Hardys and the Dudleys and Edge and Christian.
Right.
He's also hurt that he doesn't really have a tip-top, like, singles match.
No.
2014 sucks. But when you get into, like...
Is this China match his best match?
Singles? And the King of the Ring?
Yeah.
Where he wears the jock strap? Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, that's not a bad match.
Is he the only member of DX who hasn't had his... dick touched by China
in real life or in the ring?
either.
I mean, guess Rick Rude. He might have dipped it in, but I don't know for sure. Yeah. But yeah, of the modern DX, I think he's the only one.
She banged Billy Gunn, right?
In storyline, anyway, right? That seemed like they were close. They were canoodling.
Yeah, like he probably swooped in.
He was an ass man.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. And she had a bulbous ass. There was some bulbous and stuff.
Yeah, I just don't know. I mean, yeah, I guess good promo skills, one dimensional. Like, I feel like, yes, it was over, and I know that's the thing. Like, when it's over, it's over. But even The Rock, like, his shit was over, and it was the same, but he varied it up. Like, I feel like Road Dogg didn't vary it up once he hit a certain spot. The hardcore stuff is fun, but I don't know if it's as much of it as you may remember. Like, I feel like it's like three matches. That's good. I don't know. I just don't think he's got... Like, I don't know if he's ever had a match like above like 3 stars, even as a tag team. Like, I mean, maybe the dumpster match, but like, I know it wasn't about that at that time period. But then he gets into the single stuff. He's got the feud with X-Pac and the team with X-Pac, which is like kind of okay. It just feels like Outlaws light. Like even that match with the Dullies is kind of disappointing. And then he just does the shoot with like K-Quick before getting fired, which just went nowhere.
Get rowdy.
Yeah, get move some dangs. But I just. Yeah, I just don't think there's enough there for me to put, especially in the 80s. Like, I don't know. Maybe you could have convinced me as like your 100, but I think he's too high. I just literally, he's probably too high.
He's probably too high.
Yeah.
You know what it is? Is that like, I think it's not that for me he's that high. It's just when I was making my list, I found that like the last like 30 spots were actually, I found hard to fill with guys. Like I found like, oh, this guy really, does he deserve there? So I think it has more to do with how little I think of the people behind him. Not that I think little of them, but you get what I'm saying, right? Like it wasn't like, oh my God, he's so good. It was, oh, I think he's a bit better than this guy.
Like, he's, I don't think he's better than like Honky Tonk Man.
I think
they're pretty
he's
similar, but I think Honky's got better stuff.
I think Honky was had nuclear heat and his character was better. But I think Road Dogg was probably a better talker. I think Road Dogg is probably a better worker.
I think
Road Dogg had a longer peak. Like,
really?
So I
feel like his peak is only, what, 98 to maybe mid 2000?
Yeah, but that's longer than Honky.
I put Honky at 87 to... What, 89? All right, by what, a half a year then? Okay, sorry. Road Dogg's peak was 6 months longer. Okay.
Yeah, but I also have him like two spots ahead of him. It's not like I have him 10 spots ahead of him.
I know. I'm just saying, you said everyone below him you don't think as highly of.
That's right.
Okay. All right, let's do – all right, so my 82, I have Pedro Morales. You have him higher though, so we'll come back to him. Who's
sure.
your 82?
My 82 is – I believe you have higher, so we're going to come back to him. It's Jerry the King Lawler.
Jerry Stupid Lawler, yes. I have him higher, so we'll get to him as well. So, all right, let's keep chugging, man. My 81, I believe this is a guy I have and you don't, and that is Jacques Rougeau. Looking at my list, the guy that I don't – at first glance, I think maybe a little too high, but then I think of how much I enjoy his character work. Like, he's a dynamic personality in the Rougeaus. When you watch yourself, especially his heels, like he's the mouthpiece, right? He's the guy that runs his mouth and you know, he's always the one, Ray's kind of his backup. And then the Quebecers, he is like just a tour de force in that role. And the Quebecers are probably my favorite, like guilty pleasure team of all time.
Guilty, I don't know if it's pleasure. Even
guilty pleasure. Yeah. It may be just favorite of all time. But he's like, he's what drives that. Like Pierre may be more of kind of the worker, but Jacques is just like the force of nature as a personality. Just him yucking it up with Johnny Polo, laughing, like making fun of guys in French. Like just all that shit was so good.
They're just so happy.
Right? Oh, like, it's so good. Times. The singing of the songs, like both songs. Yeah. Like he comes up with this "I'm the Mountie" song, which is just so ludicrous. And then he doubles down by "We're not the Mounties." So he's going to come back. And that's just a big fuck you to Canada, right? The Mounted Police.
Right.
The All American Boys, like another great song that he sings. So multi talented. And I love that gimmick. How they turn heel and they move to America. It's like so schmaltzy, like just so smarmy. It's just a bunch of assholes. I think he has a bunch of really good matches and a couple of great ones, like Royal Rumble 94. I love the Harts and the Quebecers. Like, that's a great match. Some of the stuff with the Steiners, like the province of Quebec rules, like that's a good match and a really memorable moment. Even the some of the stuff, like the feuding with the Head Shrinkers, the matches were kind of disappointing because they're on their way out. But then even he's got the SummerSlam 89 six-man on his resume, which is an awesome match. The Rougeaus and Martel against Tito and the Rockers. Even the match with the Bulldogs, like we watched recently, SummerSlam 88, is one of the better matches on that card. It's a good match. He's in that Survivor Series 89 tag, which I like a lot, with Perfect and Rude. You know, he's in that one. You know, they kind of saddled him with the Bushwhackers a couple times. Like, they limited their push for sure, but they got some good face stuff too. So I just think he's got enough to make the list. You know, does he make it without the Quebecers run? I'm not sure. But, and then even for moments, like I didn't even mention the Mountie. Like, he's got him, him versus Piper is like a great moment. And then the Jailhouse match obviously is a really good match and moment. It's just pretty iconic, the aftermath. So he's got some shocking Brett, you know, electrocuting Brett on Superstars was good. So he's got some real quality moments as a single and a tag and a couple of high level matches. So I think he's pretty close to, you know, a whole package. He worked face, he worked heel, singles, tag. Just a super memorable character during a time where the product was down, but he really stood out.
Yeah, look, I love Jacques Rougeau. Like, I
adore that Jailhouse. Rougeau. Yeah.
Pardon me?
So you basically are Jacques Rougeau.
Yes, there is that. I am the Mountie, after all.
No! No, you're not the Mountie.
Well, I was the Mountie.
I don't want you getting arrested.
But I just couldn't justify it based on his singles work, putting him on this list. I won't deny. I actually think the Rougeaus are one of the more underrated teams of that era. I really enjoy their stuff for the most part. I love the Quebecers. I hated the Quebecers at the time, even though I was from Quebec, because I had a dream – like a year before they came out, that there was a tag team called the Quebecers.
Come on.
I'm serious. They didn't look like them. Because here's the thing. In Quebec, like, there's always, like, tension over the language stuff.
Right.
And, like, if you were English, you weren't a real Quebecer. So it was, like, it was an upsetting thing. It was an upsetting dream. So when they came out, I was like, oh, my fucking God, I can't believe I had this dream, right? And I didn't want to cheer for them because of that. Now looking back, they're amazing. Like, there's a moment at WrestleMania 10 where they're trying to suplex Mabel together, and they stop to yell at each other, which if you've ever met a French Quebecer, that's how they are.
That's what they do.
They just hate one another.
There's a lot of great moments too, though, like random shit, like on Superstars, like in those little like Stan Lane in the studio, and they cut to them for a promo. Like, there's so many random ones. Like, they do this one before WrestleMania 10. Where they do a rap making fun of Men on a Mission. That's just, like, glorious. Yeah. And, like, they get a lot of those little things. Like, they were really good in those settings. And they're actually and I didn't mean to cut you off, but stuff popped in my head, and I'm defending Jacques, and you're not. Scott and I obviously watched, you know, we're into 95 now, but we watched, like, all those 93 Raws, and they are, like, linchpin workhorses from the fall into, like, January, February. I didn't even mention the match with Kid and Jannetty, which was really good on Raw, and then I haven't actually seen the MSG one. But I've heard that was, like, excellent. And all the stuff they got going on, like, with Polo versus Jannetty and the Kid all through the fall, like, they're heavily involved in all that stuff. Also, another big moment for them is when they're at the end of the Intercontinental Battle Royal with the Razor and Martel. They're, like, so the three French-Canadian guys are being up. Like, you know, they were put in positions to really be – they're looked at almost as a main event level above the tag division for a stretch there, which I thought was interesting, like, even against the Hearts and all that. They're presented as more than just kings of the tag division. They're actually elevated a bit above that for a stretch there in the winter of 93 into 94.
Do you not feel that – and this is not to denigrate that, but do you not feel that that's actually more of an indictment of who was there? Because I remember watching that Survivor Series match where Luger and Undertaker fight Yoko and his guys.
Right.
And Jacques just felt like completely out of place in that match for me.
I don't know. I think if you watch it in order, like the stretch of it, I don't think he feels out of place. Their position is like... they're actually positioned better than I remembered rewatching it. Like, I always thought they were just kind of goof, like almost like hockey, right? Like, just kind of goofballs that escaped with the belt and almost like the Mountie was. But they're actually presented as, like, legitimately good during that stretch. Like, they're not just, like, goof comedy workers. Like, they're pretty dominant. And I mean, maybe it has to do a little bit with who was there, but I don't know. Like, you know, you're championing Yoko, and he was on top during that stretch, and like Michaels was back around. Like, I mean, they had some pretty good top level guys.
Yeah, but Yoko's like the 84th best guy of all time. You know, like,
right. So I think Jacques is right above him. Actually, no, see, that, I think he's a lot above him.
Well, you have him way above him.
Yeah, I think he's got more to his resume. I think he's got matches that Yoko doesn't have. He's got multiple runs. I think he's got bigger moments.
You think he has bigger moments than Dolph Ziggler?
Than Dolph Ziggler, yes.
Oh wow! See, I wouldn't go there for me. Like,
I think he's more memorable than Dolph Ziggler.
I don't know. Like, that title win for Ziggler is huge. Well, we'll talk. I'm sure we'll talk about him at some point.
But. Yeah. Okay. All right. Let's move on. I think we've exhausted Jacques. All right. So, who is your 81?
My 81?
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be Kane.
Oh, it has to be.
Yeah, and I didn't do it on purpose to make Kane finish one spot ahead of Jerry Lawler. but I find it's funny that that's kind of how it happened.
Yeah, Will just punched a hole in a wall somewhere.
Yeah, he's not listening. It's fine.
True.
Yeah, I mean,
someone's telling him, though, and now he's punching a hole in the wall.
You talked about Kane a little while back, mm-hmm. and for me, I just think his resume, like, there was so much talk about how he has zero in his resume, like, in the For Your Consideration series. Like, he's one of those guys who just kept coming up.
Right.
Like, and be like, oh, yeah, not Kane. Kane's garbage. Like, but, like, when you sit down to actually look at what he has, like, look, the negatives are there. He overstayed his welcome, okay? He was never the greatest wrestler in the world. But, like, he's got more bad matches maybe than anyone, all right? But he's got a lot of very good to good too. Like, you look at some of his stuff. I mean, his debut was incredibly memorable. His first match with Taker was great. I even really dig the Austin King of the Ring First Blood. I think that moment's really underrated. It gets, like when
the
we
Inferno
left that
match
show,
too.
Yes. Yes, very much so. When we left that pay-per-view, King of the Ring 98, that's what we were talking about. Like, we were talking, oh my God, Austin lost to Kane.
Right.
Like, and when you think about what else was on that card, it doesn't make any sense, but that's what was on our mind.
It was a memorable moment.
My name is Kane. yeah, we talked a bit about the team with X-Pac, which I think is excellent. I actually quite enjoyed his match with Triple H at Backlash 01 mm-hmm. as well. I thought he was good in that feud. I didn't love the chain match, the rematch, or was that the chain match?
That's the chain match.
Yes, that's the one I liked. It was one of the rematches I didn't like. He was a big part too of the Invasion stuff and being on the Invasion team. And I found that in that role, even though like his stuff with Taker was never usually that great, I thought that he was a good part of that. Like, he was a good worker in those giant tag team matches,
right?
I think he gets a bit overlooked too as how he acts as a base in multi-man matches. So for instance, like the first Money in the Bank match, like, I think he's actually very good in that match. Like, he really helps structure the whole thing, him and Benoit. Like,
yeah, he's a real good base for that whole match. I agree with that 100%.
Yeah. And not everybody can do that. I liked his match with Angle on SmackDown, the one where he tapped out. Hurricane was a fun team too. Mm-hmm. With the Hurricane, that TLC match, although it's nowhere near the greatest Royal match of all time to that point, like, it's still quite strong.
Yeah.
And he was also, I mean, Team Hell No is excellent, obviously. He was a really important part of those early Shield matches as well. He was just as strong in them as, say, Ryback at the very least.
Yeah.
Royal Rumble 2001 is considered by many one of the better ones.
Yeah. He's great in that match. That might be his best match.
Yeah. He's the MVP of that match. Not a great promo guy, but I thought the character was strong enough. And, like, he became unwatchable later on, but for the most part, he was always fine as a big guy.
Like, yeah, even though he couldn't cut a promo, like, he emoted well, you know? So, like, behind the mask, he was real good at just letting you know, like, his emotions, especially, like, in 98 and 99 in 2000, like, during that stretch. Another moment you didn't mention that's a great one is his return in Dallas in that 10-man when him and Paul Bearer come out.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's great. And or even like you're talking about the emoting, like you felt for him when he was being cuckolded by Tori.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Oh yeah, like, it was a very emotional connection. And he, in 2002, he was mega over too until he got hurt. Remember, he tore his bicep like right after the draft. But they were positioning him to be one of the top guys on Raw, and he was super over then too. That might have been like his peak overness, honestly. I feel like as a wrestler, if he had retired in like even 2006, I think we look at him much differently. I think the last 10 to 12 years has dragged him down, because his even though he was still like fine, the quality has dropped. The character got like, once they kind of ran out of gas with the revealing and like went back to the mask and all that stuff, you know what I mean? Like, and then even the stuff with Edge on like, was that like 10 on SmackDown is like real fucking blah. But I guess he got the Hell No run. I mean, other than that, I think other than Hell No, it's been diminishing returns since like 2006 for him. So I think if he retires in 2006, he's like easily on the list. Hell No helps him. But everything else from like 2007 on has, it's pretty spotty. His work rate went down considerably.
Yeah. I mean, it was really cool to see him get the World Heavyweight title in 2010, but it didn't lead to anything good.
Right. No, not at all.
Which,
I mean,
which was a shame.
When did he, and when was the cash in on Ray? Was that,
it was in 2010. It was at the Money in the Bank. It was the first Money in the Bank paper.
Right. Okay. So that's that one when he cashes in the same night. Yeah, that was cool. But then all the stuff with Edge were like, who was face, who was heel, like when Edge is kidnapping Paul Bearer and all that shit. And then the Vegetative State and that redux with Kane and Undertaker again.
Love that term. They love the term Vegetative State.
Oh, yeah. Linda, Taker, they're all in one. But that stretch was rough, too.
I thought he was funny marrying Lita. Like, that wedding ceremony is very funny.
Yeah.
Like, him coming down the ring.
I like 2004 with all that shit. Like, even with Snitsky, like, I like that feud. And 2005, like, his team with Big Show was kind of fun. 2004, he's got the match with Benoit, which was pretty good. You know, so he's got a lot of stuff. Like, I just think by 2006 is when, okay, you know, when they start doing the Kane versus Kane shit, like, all that stuff. And he's feuding with Big Show again, and he's going crazy. Like, that's when it kind of goes off the cliff. And then 12, before Hell No, you get all the stuff with Zack Ryder and Cena. Like, that's awful. The match at the Rumble.
Oh, Embrace the Hate.
Yeah, just all that shit is, like, brutal.
Do you blame him at all for Katie Vick?
No, not really.
Can't, right?
No, you can't. I mean, you know. And they neutered him. Political hit. I mean, but really, like, he's coming off this red-hot TLC win. He's looking great. And then that. Like, that night. It's the same night. Katie Vick is the same night as a TLC match. So it's like they waited till he got as hot as he could and then they shit on him. So anyway, I think we've talked a lot about Kane. We talked a lot too about making the cut about him. So you can listen to that. But I think he belongs on the list. I mean, you obviously had him higher than me, but for those that left him off, I think he's got enough to warrant at least on the back end. I mean, it's, you know, again, I think if he retired in 06, maybe he's higher because he doesn't have as much crap. But there's still some crap in there too. Like the late 98 with Taker and all that shit. Some of those matches are rough. 99, those two matches of Big Show are fucking brutal. A King of the Ring and Fully Loaded.
They're terrible.
Yeah, so he's got some rough stuff in there too. But I think he belongs.
Yeah, and like you really have to weigh the bad stuff more heavily to take him off your list.
Yeah, agreed. All right, my 80 is a member of the Shield, and that is Seth Rollins. Aaron, do you have him higher though?
I do. I do have him substantially higher.
Okay. All right. So we'll talk about him substantially later.
That pause was not on purpose, just so you know.
Okay. Sounds good. All right. Who's your 80?
My 80 is someone you spoke of in the honorable mentions.
Yes.
And it's Bammer. Bam Bam Bigelow.
The King of Asbury Park.
Scott Bigelow.
Yeah, that's him.
Remember the Jersey Triad?
Yep. Greetings from Asbury Park.
Yes, all of it. All of it works. Anyway, Bam Bam, for me, I love the character in 87. I thought he was so interesting and different, and I think they kind of dropped the ball with him. I mean, that might be him as well, kind of thing. I think he's got a longer run than a lot of people remember. Like, he comes back in – Is it late 92 or early 93?
Yeah, like December 92.
Yeah, and he's there till almost 1996. So that's a good like 3 year almost a 3 year run, right? Like, so you tack that on, so he's got about 4 years total, which is not horrible. I love his look. I love his agility in the ring. He doesn't have a ton of jump up moments, but I think he's really great in that original Survivor Series main event.
Oh yeah, he's awesome. We just watched that. Yeah, he's fantastic. I mean, that should have been his star making moment. Like, he looked phenomenal in that thing, and it goes nowhere after. But he was great in that match.
Yeah, like, I feel he's just like one of those guys who's just is just a victim of timing everywhere. Like, because like by late 87, like, you know, they're going with Hogan and Savage. Right. So where do you go with this guy? Right. And even in like, there's not really place for him in 94, 95 to really move up the card. I mean, he's got a solid place. But
right.
I really like the Brett King of the Ring final. I think that's probably his best match mm-hmm. in the company.
Is good. I don't know if you've seen that on Brett's DVD.
Yes, I have.
Yeah,
I have. It's very good. I think I like the King of the Ring one a bit better, but the Spain one is also very good. I thought he was actually quite good in the whole King of the Ring tournament, and I thought mm-hmm. he was a great foil for Brett. He's got the main event at WrestleMania 11, which is in a lot of ways like a miracle job that he that match didn't suck, and it's a lot on him. And I just, for him, he's a guy I don't see a lot of bad matches out of. Whereas we just talked about Kane, he's got as many bad as he has good. I don't remember a lot of bad Bam Bam Bigelow matches. Like, even his matches with Doink, like, weren't horrible.
The Survivor Series pretty rough, but yeah, Survivor Series 93 is a mess too.
But Survivor Series 93 is a lot going on. I definitely will not fight anyone on that. Yeah, like,
it was meant to be a mess.
I liked him. It was a literal mess. I liked him as a TV worker. I really dug him just as in general.
He's a good squash worker for sure.
Oh yeah, and I think where he kind of really wasn't very good was where he's fighting Goldust when Goldust was starting out. Like, I find those matches are just dreadful to sit through.
Brutal, yeah.
Yeah, and it's too bad.
He was checked out at that point, but...
Yeah.
I mean, his flame, pun intended, went out. As soon as they shunted him down and they moved him into, like, the feud with Henry Godwin and all that shit, like, in late 95. I mean, by that point, he was just, sorry, I'm done. I do think they did him no favors the way they handled him in 95. Like...
No.
He comes off the LT match. He's hot. He has a really fun match with Diesel on Raw. And then I feel like they should have dragged out him as a heel longer and had him feud with Diesel into, like, the summer and then turn
Instead face. Of Sid.
Or just delay Sid, right? Delay Sid a little bit. Because they make Bigelow, like, the sympathetic little buddy for Diesel. And as cool and unique as his look is, he just looks like a goof. Like, it was the wrong guy for him to be buddies with, right? Because he looks more like a natural heel. And he's with Diesel. Diesel's like a big, tall, handsome dude with his hair. And, like, he's real cool. And he's out there with all these celebrities. And, like, you know, you can see him being, like, the face. Like, you can see why they chose Kevin Nash as the face of the company in 95, right?
Sure.
And then he's got this stupid fucking... like, midget-looking guy next to him with tattooed head. He's fat. And he's wearing this bodysuit. Like, it's, like, you can see why, like, rewatching those Raws, you can see why they did what they did with him. Like, you can see why the click probably was like, all right, you know, come on. Like, and even if he was great and over, his look didn't scream, like, top-level face. Like, I think he maxed out. And I always kind of, in the past... thought they really fucked him in 95, but rewatching that whole summer and everything and that whole year, I don't think they did. Like, I think he maxed out his potential. He wasn't a great talker. He was awkward on the mic. And he was a better heel worker than a face. And I just thought his look wasn't conducive to being a top face. So I actually thought they should have left him as a heel, to be honest with you.
Yeah. It felt like what I said before, it felt like the business was passing him by in that moment.
Right.
Like, they were going for the young, cool, whereas in 87, he was the young and cool.
Right.
Like, he didn't look like a loser then. Like, he looked like a loser now. And then,
yes.
Like, the adjustments they made to his costume were terrible. And I see what you're saying about 95. For me, it's all based on, I just really like his ring work for the most part. And for me, that's generally not a huge thing. But when I'm up at this number, it just kind of put him above the guys behind him.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy that obviously, I mean, he's obviously a favorite. Like I said, my message board name forever is Bigelow 34. But I just, yeah, I mean, I could have probably edged him inside the 100. I don't know. I had such a hard time with that bottom, like, five. Like, I feel like they all should be there, but I didn't want them any higher.
Right.
You know, like, Kane, Yoko, Morrison, Duggan, Shamrock, Bigelow. Like, I feel like they all belong in there. Yeah, so, anyway.
You know, it's funny. Like, he's one of these guys, like, I know we all agonized over our lists. But I bet you even if you made another list in, like, 6 months, there might be some differences.
Yeah, for sure. And he's probably on. You know, I think he's probably on if I were to do it again. Especially now because I'm seeing him in 87 more. He had a really fun, like, Haas match with Bundy. I think it's a November MSG show, I want to say. It's like a 5 minute, just they beat the shit out of each other. So that's fun. And the other match too, I like him in the Survivor Series 94 on DiBiase's team. Like, he's good in that too. So anyway, there you go.
Bam, bam.
Hope you've enjoyed this episode of Making the Cut. Make sure you stay tuned as we continue to work our way through our list. At some sort of period of time here on PlaySimulation.com. Follow all of our podcast feeds on iTunes, PlaySimulation Wrestling, PlaySimulation Pop, Pro Wrestling Only, and you can get each and every thing you may need in your pop culture world, especially when it comes to this project. So, that's it. Talk to you next time.
Okay. Yeah!
Okay, there you go!